This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome, welcome back in, all of you wonderful people, to Spicier Than Therapy, the podcast where we talk about polyamory, ethical non-monogamy, neurodiversity, BDSM, kink,
and all of the wonderful things that we think go into making a healthy, loving relationship.
Hey, twin, what are we going to do today?
The same thing we do every day, my love. Try to take over the interwebs. And this week, we are joined again by a very special guest, Katie-osaurus.
Hello!
Hi! Thank you so much for coming back. We are so excited to have you. This has been a lot of fun. I know last week, we kind of talked about a lot, everything from, you know, your experience with poly and kink and educating on TikTok and YouTube and, you know, the frustrations that come with all of that, as well as the joys. So, thank you again for joining us back again this week.
Thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
How many times can I say the word again in a single sentence? Yeah. So this week, we're going to get into a little bit more of like the deeper context of things. I think it's going to be a little bit of like how specifically more about like your relationships and then like managing expectations in social media. Yeah. So I wanted to start with something that I know I personally have kind of not really had trouble navigating because I had a sort of jumpstart with this, but it's something that I'm interested to get your take on. And that is, are there parts of yourself that you feel compelled to keep protected from the social media audience?
Oh, no, I think I did the opposite thing. I think that I went in wanting to be radically honest. And what that basically meant was just putting all of my business on the internet. So I'm actually pretty open and pretty straightforward, I think. I mean, I think there's like a couple of things. Like, I cry way more than I think people would expect. Like, I cry all the time about everything. But it's just hard to record a video while you're crying. That's really cringy. You know, like that kind of thing. But yeah, no, I went completely in the opposite direction where I didn't expect any of this. Like, I never expected any of this to happen. And so I didn't go into it thinking like, oh, I have to like keep this part of myself separate. I just went in being like, I don't know, I guess I'm going to make some content. And now everybody knows all of my business. So that's fun. But here we are.
You know, I think we have to keep some of our things separate just because we have so many family members that like to stalk all of our content. And, you know, we have very, very healthy boundaries with our family. Like, here's the things it's okay to ask us about. And here's the things it's not okay because it's, you know, it's our business, not yours. Have you run into that at all with any like distant cousin or third nephew twice removed?
Oh yeah, I mean much closer than that, but honestly, like, I kind like, it was so funny, like a family member who shall remain nameless got like all mad because I was talking about kink on the internet, and I was like, you know, the name of the interview, like the name of the podcast, was Katie-osaurus talks about kink. Like, you knew what you were getting into. Like, this wasn't like a surprise. I wasn't like, oh, come for the D&D surprise and we're talking about heavy impact, you know. I was like, y'all know what you're getting into here, you know. And so for me, like, one of the things that I've struggled with is that we have some, shall we say, less than understanding and less than accepting family members. But I was like, I'm not going to change what I'm doing because you don't like it. Like, you are a grown-ass adult. You are, you know, I am a whole person. And if you cannot handle this idea that I talk about, you know, sex and sexuality on the internet, then don't look at my content. Like, it's not my responsibility to manage your internet stalking. it is your adult responsibility to view the content that you want to view and then stay out of my business. And so,
and not be creepy about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, like that kind of thing. It's like, I've had like a weird amount of people that I know have, you know, signed up for my OnlyFans and like, you know, like people that have, you know, like dated, you know, years ago and like that kind of thing. And it doesn't bother me, you know, because I'm just kind of like, well, you know what you're coming here for. Like, this isn't like a surprise, you know? And so, yeah, so like, that's kind of how I view it, is I am not going to make myself small and change the things that I'm doing to make somebody else comfortable, because I'm not doing anything harmful. You know, if I was being harmful, if I was being like shitty, then yeah, I should change that behavior. But educating and advocating is not a bad thing, and I shan't be apologizing for it. So.
Right. And I know, like, in our experience, I know we've, you know, I've had family members, like, similarly to you, that shall not be named, that have asked about our content. Like, I don't mind mentioning this, like, my grandmother, we talk about her sometimes on my podcast, and she's one of those that I'm very fortunate. She maybe isn't understanding, like, she doesn't quite get what and why we talk about these things, or why we partake in them. But she's also of just like, all right, I love you, you know?
Yeah.
But there's definitely been times where I've been like, she asked about our podcast, and I was like, I would love for you to listen to our podcast, but just remember that whatever you hear is whatever you hear. Like, if you don't want to listen to it, don't listen to it. You're a grown adult, but if you want to, sure. And then I've had cousins and aunts that were like, oh, well, what's your TikTok? And I'm going, no, you're not allowed on it. Like, what? Let me know what yours is so I can block you.
Well, and I think there's, you know, this entire, and I love your answer, by the way, there's this kind of entire thought process that, you know, we all want to be uniquely and unequivocally ourselves. And I like people that do that, that are their authentic selves online. They're not changing who they are to meet the needs of anybody else. Love that. I feel like the thing that I've had to learn over the last year and a half, and I'd be curious if you've had any kind of interactions like that, is Twin had to tell me to be more like safe with my physical safety online. Because when I used to do lives, when I lived in Texas, I lived in a very, very recognizable part of the downtown area. And I would do my lives on my patio, and people would just like walk under it and like yell up at me while I'm doing on lives. And that was always fun. I liked that. But then people would show up at my apartment at like midnight trying to get in. And these are people I don't know. So from a safety and security aspect, I've had to learn a little bit of that and had to kind of keep some of those things that I'm doing in real time separate. Have you had to deal with any of those things?
I mean, I'm a woman on the internet, so.
Fair.
That is exactly what I was going to say. I was like, this is such a man situation.
Yeah, I mean, yes. I mean, the serious answer is yes. I mean, I'm careful about some things. But actually, very interestingly enough, couple of months ago now, I got doxxed, which had never happened before. And it was through Kiwi Farms. I got doxxed by Kiwi Farms, which if you followed that whole debacle, that was very interesting. And they found, I still don't know where they came from, but they got OnlyFans content of mine, and they sent it to my mom. Not only did they dox me, but they doxed my mom, and they sent her. But it was really funny because so that was scary, right? Because that was like, okay, all of a sudden, like, they know my phone number, they know my address, you know, like that kind of stuff. That was terrifying. But what was really interesting about the situation was that it resolved in a way that I did not expect it to, which was that my mom and I wound up having a really great conversation about my work. Like, she was unfazed by the pics, you know. She's just like, okay, like, okay, people have parts, good job, you know. But we had this like really wonderful conversation. So it was really strangely like this like very silver lining of my mom for the first time like understood why I do what I do, how I do what I do, like what kind of content I actually make. Like, and it was really nice. We had this wonderful thing. And so it's really interesting, I think, like the dichotomy of trying to stay safe on the internet which is difficult anyway. But then knowing that there are people who are actively trying to hurt you and actively trying to harm you, but also in that sort of like discovering that, realizing that sometimes that in itself can foster more understanding and more conversation and more acceptance. And so it was like weirdly like the trolls lost that day, even though, you know, technically they won, worst case scenario. But I was like, yeah, the worst thing that could possibly happen happened. They sent naked pictures to my mom and my mom was like, okay, like, cool.
And that's part of why I joke now is like, I am an alcoholic. I'm sober now, but I'm an alcoholic who like, I'm a stripper, I'm a sex worker, and I'm all this. My grandparents know it. I used to be the black sheep of the family, and now I'm like the trustee in the family. And so like, I find it hilarious, you know, just like how things can turn when you have a family member that is supportive and loving and understanding. And so like, I love that you and your mom got to have that kind of conversation and that coming together from such a negative experience.
Yeah it's nice when that happens, you know.
See, and I just have like random strangers showing up on my doorstep, so I'm glad nobody's been, like, sent nudes to my dad, who'd be like, all right, cool, yeah, I guess.
I made that,
right? Yeah. Came out of me, it's fine. So I mean, kind of like talking about all of these people that are, you know, trying to hurt you, or, you know, that have something to say and responding in a very healthy way, and then having, you know, positive things come out of it. How do you and your polycule navigate criticism in real life of being poly, either, you know, IRL or from trolls online? How do you handle that?
I mean, this is going to be like a weird take, but like, I mean, at some point you don't have time to read every comment. Like, you know, that just becomes a reality of life. I used to read every single comment twice, you know. I used to like, oh, did they really mean that exclamation point? I better overanalyze it. But at a certain point you don't have time to read every comment, you know, you can't respond to every message anyway. And so there have been a couple of times where people will say shitty things, or, you know, like, shall we say, less than educated things. But one of the things that I actually think has been really interesting is that we haven't really gotten all that much hate. You know, we haven't gotten all that much pushback. You know, every so often somebody comes to the comments and calls Chris a cuck, or, you know, like some silly thing like that.
Cucks around here, just for the record.
Right. soy boy beta cuck. But like, I think what has happened is really interesting for us, at least, is that we found a community that is pretty universally supportive, you know, is pretty much universally accepting, and that, and the people who aren't are either one of two things. They are either misinformed, undereducated, perhaps have never met a poly person before, never interacted with a you know, kinky. I'm like, surprised you've absolutely interacted with a kinky person before. You just didn't know it, you know. Or they're just there to be mad on the internet. And one of those groups, you know, group A, you can absolutely reach out to those people. You know, like, I've had some really lovely conversations with people who are like, oh my God, I could never, you're cheating on your husband. And I'm like, well, actually, let's unpack that. You know, like, let's break down what that means. Like, let's talk about it. And so as much as possible, when people are shitty, I try to use it as a learning opportunity, as an education opportunity to represent. We very much prefer the term ethical non-monogamy to polyamory, you know, but we try to represent the community and do a little bit of teaching. But then if it's, you know, they're coming in the comments and, you know, calling me a fat bitch and soy boy beta cuck and like that kind of thing, I'm like, okay, well, then you get a block. You know, you just get a block. Like, I don't have time for that. I don't have time for that in my life. You know, I get 100,000 comments a day. Like, I don't, goodbye forever, stranger on the internet, you know? I think sometimes it's frustrating just because I'm a people pleaser, and I'm somebody who wants everybody to be happy, and I want everybody to be okay. And it feels really shitty when, because of my content, you know, like, one of my partners has a negative experience. But I also just think even in those negative experiences, there is room for education, there's room for kindness, there's room for compassion. And if there's not, then they just get a block and everybody moves on with their day, you know?
So I'm curious about something you said in that. I'm curious as to why y'all prefer the term ethically non-monogamous versus polyamorous, because I know like
it's a very hot take.
We use it interchangeably, so I'm just curious. It's fine.
It's honestly wanna... it's okay. It's, we've actually talked about this a lot when we used to do way more lives on TikTok, but we kind of got away from it. But I think it's just because ethical is in the name, and so it's like when you have that conversation about like, wait, you have more than one partner, you know, it's like you have to start with the word ethical, you know. Whereas, unfortunately, and this might be a spicy take, but there have been a lot of real shitty people who have co-opted the term polyamory, but what they actually mean is I'm out cheating on my wife or my partner or whoever, but I can't help it because I'm polyamorous. Oh my God, it's just, you know.
Right, it's not an excuse to be a piece of shit.
Yeah, it's not an excuse to be a piece of shit. And so that is really important to me, and so I like that term. But also because I think non-monogamy is much more like weirdly broad, right? Because it's like, okay, well, there, like, monogamy looks like, can look different ways, you know? And so that I like as well, because it's like, it's sort of like a nice little explainer course, just like in using the title. And honestly, I just got tired of like unicorn hunters, because that happens to me a lot. And so it was like, oh, we're poly. And I'm like, no, you just need a living sex toy. And so Right. Exactly. And so that was kind of the point where I was like, okay, well, if I take poly out of my bio and I put ENM in, it winds up attracting more of the type of people that I want to hang out with.
Yeah. Well, and we did an entire episode on like the umbrella term of ethical non-monogamy and all of the different things that can be encompassed under that. And we got a lot of great feedback on that. I think we just used poly for brevity, but yeah. You're right. You know, a lot of those pieces of feedback, because we get a lot of those questions and comments as well. Isn't that just cheating with, you know, extra steps, whatever? And, you know, I feel like we might have to start either using that or explaining it a little bit better. But I think the one time that we started using ethical non-monogamy, we got more swingers in our comments and in our lives, which is fine. Like, I swing as well, and it's not really twins thing. But, I, you know, since it is also encompassed under that umbrella term, it's like,
Yeah, no, that makes sense too. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just like, I'm never like going to like gatekeep you know, what you want to call yourself. But for us, especially because we get so much of the like, well, are you guys, isn't this just cheating? It's like having that, like, well, you have to start with ethical before you get to non-monogamy. Like, it's like right there in the, you know, so like I found that it just opens up a little bit more dialogue and like generative debate, or not debate, but like just discussion, you know? But yeah, it's kind of like little column A, little column B.
Awesome. Thank you. I love that answer. So moving into the next one. So you've talked a lot about your advocacy work and the way you educate across your social media platforms. What do you think has been like the best return on investment for that? Like, what have you gotten the most back from in your advocacy work?
If I can get through this answer without crying, I will be shocked and surprised. But so, you know, I started off making shit posts, basically, you know, things in my ADHD home that just make sense, like that kind of stuff. And then in the comments section of that, there were like some good questions, so I started answering those. And then in those comment sections, there would be more questions. And so like I sort of just sort of very weirdly fell into making content about my experience as a neurodivergent person. Like, it was not like I didn't wake up and decide to start talking about ADHD. And so it always felt kind of accidental. You know, it always kind of felt like I was just kind of like right place, right time, like that kind of thing. And then one day somebody was like, hey, do you have a P.O. box? Because I would like to send you a letter. And I was like, oh, that's weird. Like, people want to send me mail. So I got a P.O. box and I got it. And like a couple of days later, I got a letter and it was from a person who said, you know, there's no undramatic way of saying this, but you are the reason I didn't kill myself, because of your content. And I was like, huh, like that's a lot.
That's heavy.
That's a lot to internalize. And so I kind of just, you know, read the letter and kind of put it on the counter and left it. And then a couple of days later, I went back and I checked my PO box again, and I had 4 letters. And there was one from a wife who said that my content was the first time that she understood her husband, and felt like her relationship was going to be okay. I got a letter from a kid saying that I was the first person with a master's degree that, you know, with ADHD that they had ever heard of. And so they were going to go to grad school because of my content. And then they just kept coming. They like, and so it's like, and it's funny because I often forget my PO box exists. And so I will go back, you know, and the people at the post office know who I am at this point, and they're always like, oh my God, where have you been? But now I don't get them in the ones, I get them in the dozens. And so there's an entire wall of my house that is now just covered in letters. And I think that's my answer, is like, I haven't made a lot of money doing this. I don't think become rich and famous in any sort of way that I was like, yes, this is the glamorous life of celebrities surrounded by garbage and old coffee cups. But I have helped people in this world. Like I've helped people. People are apparently alive because of me. I've helped relationships. I've helped parents understand their kids. I've helped, you know, partners understand their partners. That's very big. That's a very big thing. And it's often very hard to internalize because it's just so much. And so that's my answer, is that that's been the return, is knowing that because of being honest, because of being open, because of just kind of deciding like, fuck it, I'm going to do this on my own terms and talk about the things that I care about, I got to help people. And that's cool.
It is a good and noble thing. And your vulnerability in, you know, dealing with what you've dealt with and being open and honest definitely has helped people. And that's a crazy good answer. Thank you. You made it through the answer.
I did. I was like, stare at the ceiling. Don't cry.
Meanwhile, Twin's over there crying and staying off the mic, so she can't talk right now.
Look, I'm a Pisces. I cry at the drop of a hat, okay?
But no, I absolutely love that answer. And now I just kind of want to write you a letter too and just be like, I'm going to add to the pile. So that actually leads me to one of the other questions that we didn't prepare you in advance for, but because you have gotten so big and now you get dozens of letters and, like you said, 100,000 comments a day, how do you manage those social interactions and those social expectations when you're getting such high volume of communication in every different method on a daily basis?
That's a really good answer question. I don't know if I have a good answer though, because I mean, a lot of it is just, I do my best, you know, like I, one of the hardest parts for me was when the number of messages that I was getting a day were more than the number of messages a day that I could answer. That was devastating. That was so hard for me to accept. But so basically what I try and do now is I have a lot, like, it sounds disingenuous, but it's actually, it's an accessibility tool. But I have a lot of like formatted emails, you know, like, cause a lot of times people just want resources, you know, like, do you have a book recommendation or do you have like stuff that you can help me out with? And so, you know, I've got like kind of like those prepped so I don't have to write the email every time. You know, but sometimes it is important to me that I be accessible, you know, and I have the ability to talk with people. And so I've been pretty public about the fact that, like, if you want a response, the only platform where I can guarantee a response is on OnlyFans. And it's just because I'm being paid for my time, you know, and it seems, it sucks because, like, I was a theater person who became a content creator. And so when you talk about like valuing your time, Like, that is not something that I ever learned. Like, I'm still doing it for the exposure 90% of the time. You know what I mean?
It's a foreign concept. It's a starving artist. Concept,
you know? Yeah. And so it was like the first time somebody was like, I'll give you $1,000 to make a TikTok. I was like, I'm sorry, what? You know, like that kind of thing. And so for me, it's really about, I provide as many avenues as I can. I've, you know, emails, Twitter DMs, Instagram DMs, TikTok DMs, OnlyFans DMs. And I try to be really transparent about, I can't, the volume of stuff that I get every day, I cannot do it. You know, but I have avenues where people will get a response. Yeah, I don't have a good answer. That's really the thing. You know what I mean?
It's a great answer because you actually told kind of a version of that story at Dragon Con where you're like, I used to respond to every email.
I did.
And then it freaked me out when I can't respond to every email.
It's so like, I feel so bad, you know, and it's because like people don't send emails or messages unless they really want an answer. They're, you know what I mean? And so it's like when I can't, that's like, it upsets me because I feel like I have like an obligation. And so kind of like letting go of like putting that pressure and expectation on myself and just saying like, you know what, I'm going to do what I can with the time that I have. And sometimes, as awful as this sounds, like it is more beneficial that I can make, you know, a 10-minute YouTube video and help 5,000 people rather than spend that same amount of time writing an email for one person. And that sucks that I have to think about it that way and like, and, you know, sort of monetize the conversation that way. But that sort of shifting my perspective about like the good of the whole versus like the individual, but also sometimes it's just really fun to like surprise people. You know, it's like really fun to just like drop into like their Twitch and just be like, hey, what's up? And they're like, oh my God. And I'm like, yeah, what's up? Like, that's just fun. You know, you get to do that too. So it's like, I don't know. There's a balance to it, I think.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people that don't make content, that just consume content, kind of really not underplay, but they don't understand just the sheer volume of comments, emails, and apparently for you, written letters that big content creators get all the time.
Just like the amount of work. And I did that too. Like I am of the generation that like I was 11 when we got the internet at my house. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I'm just of that sort of like elder millennial where like I would look at Instagram influencers and be like, oh, these dumb vapid bitches, you know, like, oh, they have the easiest job in the whole world. And then, you know, but it was never like something that I wanted to do. Like I never, you know, and now I do it. And I was like, I was so wrong. And I was so shitty. And I had no idea what I was talking about. And I completely had to reframe my perspective on just the shitty judgments that I put on those people. And it was because like, you see the picture, you know, you see the 1 minute video, you don't see the like hours and hours and hours of work that goes into maintaining the community and the Discord and filming and editing and fixing your sound because your microphone cable got kinked in the middle, you know, like just all of those like things that you have to do. And so like, even when I was sort of like just starting to come up as a creator, I found myself doing that a lot. Like I would just be like, oh, my job is so easy, or oh, my job is so silly. And I still am embarrassed to be like, I'm a creator. But yeah, like there's so much work. There's so much work that goes into it outside of the, you know, 1 minute video that you see. You know, and people are like, oh my God, you get paid how much to make 1 minute, like a 1 minute video? Your life is so swank. And I'm like, yeah, but it's the 14 hours that I spend maintaining that community for the views that I'm going to get on that one video. That's what you're paying for, you know? And so, yeah, but yeah, I used to be real shitty. And then I realized how wrong I was. And so as personal growth as possible.
Well, and I know that like, that's, you know, like that's a bit of a conversation that's going on around TikTok, you know, when we're recording this, because this will all be coming out like in November.
Oh, sure.
But you know, like I know like right now as we're recording this, there's like the conversation around the makeup artist, Michaela something, I forget her last name. And it's because of this old soundbite of hers that's like resurfaced because people are trying to cancel her, wherein she was saying, you know, it was part of a larger conversation, of course, but this one bit was taken out of context and it was like, I'm just now getting off work and it's 5:19, you know, like you guys don't understand how much harder my life is. And, you know, of course they're using that to be like, oh, you poor baby, blah, blah, blah. And
the whole context of that video was she's like, I got up at 6 and started, you know, like my morning routine and started working at 8 and I'm getting off at 5:19. Like, yes, I work a 9-to-5 essentially. And people don't realize, and, you know, I know this has been a conversation for sex workers for years of like, yeah, you see the pretty edited pictures that we're putting up on OnlyFans or Patreon or wherever, but like, you're not seeing the 13 hours of work that went into building the set, fine tuning the costuming, editing the photos, lighting. Yeah, like all these things. And so I'm curious. Oh God, it's going to take me a second to figure out how I was going to phrase this. My ADHD meds like kicked in no while worries. I was getting coffee. Like, and I didn't realize they were kicking in until I started hyper focusing on the coffee pods. And then I was like, oh, we're here. Yeah. I forgot where I was going with all that. Honey, you
did it. All right.
Very good point. There is a lot that goes into that. What I find interesting from like just kind of the navigating the social expectations of communication aspect is the increasing volume of like business opportunity emails and messages we've been getting as opposed to just the, you know, regular, hey, can you give me more information about this? Can you give me a book recommendation for new DOMs or things like that? And because, you know, I come from the corporate world, I still do a very corporate 9-to-5 job. I have trouble like switching that off. So as soon as I see something business related come in, it instantly gets my focus and I switch back into corporate brain. Does that happen for you? Because I'm sure those business opportunity emails come through with a bit more regularity, but does it cause you to focus on them in a different way than you respond to others?
Honestly, I got a guy. I feel really pretentious. I got a guy. Because I had to, because that was the problem, is that I was getting so many emails that weren't, you know, like, that were like, well, okay, that were like business opportunities and partnerships and that kind of thing. But the fascinating truth about being a creator is like, I probably get between 5 and 12 like inquiries, proposals a day. I would say of, you know, if we say we get, if I got 10, right, we'll put it right in the middle. If I got 10, 5 of those are people wanting me to do something for free, you know, check out my game, promote my podcast. Can you retweet my Kickstarter, like brand ambassador, like that kind of thing. Then, you know, so that's like half of them are just like people wanting you to work for free and use your name. Then 2 of them are people who are like, I will give you $20 to make a 5-minute review of my product. Or if you buy this thing, I'll give you 10% off and then you can talk about it on your social, you know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. And then maybe there's 3 that are lucrative, might be beneficial or whatever. But of those, 2 of those are going to have a super shitty contract where they want to be able to use your name and your image and your content in perpetuity and not give you any residuals or anything like that. And then there's like 1 that's like, oh, this is actually a good deal. And so navigating through all of that, like that's an entire day. Like that is an entire day of work just navigating through that. And so when, like, I think it was around like 1.5 when I finally was like, I gotta get some kind of assistance, because I was spending all of my time being like, no, I'm sorry, I can't work for free, like, you know, that kind of thing. And so yeah, so having a manager whose job it is to just look at the deals, it's worth the $500, you know, to like just be like, hey, please help me with this. And so that's been a good use of my time. But it's also been like a really interesting sort of like learning experience in terms of like, how much work can I physically do in a day before I start to melt down? And the answer might surprise you.
Yeah. Well, and more importantly, it's how much do you value your own time and peace? Yeah. Because that's a way that I had to start looking at it. Yeah. Was like, I had to put a value on, and stripping taught me this.
Yeah.
I had to put a value on my time and peace and space. And that was not something I was good at.
Yeah.
At all. Until I started stripping. And then I realized like, No, I'm sitting with you. I'm entertaining you. Hello, theater brain. Like, I am entertaining you for this finite amount of time. If you're not going to pay me to do so, I will go entertain someone who will.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, everybody kind of laughs about it, you know, and scoffs at it. I was like the sort of like, fuck you, pay me mindset. But honestly, like, our time as creators, as sex workers, as whatever, is just as valuable as anyone else's. And, you know, it's kind of frustrating when people don't see that value, or if we have a hard time seeing that value.
Yeah. And it's also weird too, because like, there's this, like, this weird expectation with like creators that's different than actors, you know, that's different than even, you know, like, we'll say like CEOs or whatever, right? Because if you have an actor who has an agent and a manager and, you know, a personal assistant, you go, oh, that person's a celebrity. Of course they have that, you know? And I was like, I remember the first time that I said out loud that I had gotten a manager, I got hate mail from people being like, you're so out of touch. It's disgusting. That's so like, oh, like, we come to you for like real, and like, oh, it just turns out you're one of those like fake celebrities. And I was like, no, I'm a person with ADHD who struggles with time management, and I'm getting 1,000 emails a day. Like, fuck you. But like, and I was so upset. And so that experience, and like, I got like, and every so often I still get like shitty comments from people. And it's very much about that, like, there's this expectation with content creators that you always are authentic, and you're always, you know, you're just like this super approachable, like person. And I try so hard, but it's like a manager or like a assistant or whatever, like, that's part of work. Like, that's part of like how you make this work sustainable for a lot of people. And just the pushback and the negativity, even like when I took like my first brand deal was for glasses. I got a discount code for glasses, and I got like hate mail and stuff about how I had like sold out and how I had like lost touch. I was like, I get 10% off my glasses. This is not world changing money here, guys. But yeah, just like the strange pressure that we put on creators to like be this like hyper accessible, hyper authentic, hyper vulnerable version of themselves that is doing it all on their own. And I think it's really unreasonable. And I think it is also one of the causes of so much creator burnout, is because there's not a lot of transparency about like managers and how many like big time influencers or, you know, and like creators have like whole ass teams. You know, I don't have a whole ass team. I got like a guy, you know. But like some of like the larger creators, especially once you get into like the 4 million, 5 million, 6 million kind of follower, like Elise Myers, I love Elise Myers' content, but she's represented by one of the biggest and best publicity firms in the industry, and has like a manager and an agent and a talent manager and and it's like that kind of thing where it's like, oh my God, Elise, like, it's like, again, I love her content. She's hilarious and so funny, but it's like, also, there are thousands of dollars a month going into like PR and marketing and like that kind of thing. And it's like, we don't talk about that. There's not like a transparency there, because it's like, oh, I'm just like you. And I'm like, I have a manager. Right. You know?
But at a certain threshold, you have to manage that. Because yeah, like you said, there's not enough time and not enough bandwidth.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you will experience burnout just trying to keep up with just the regular demands of one or two platforms, much less 17.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, then there's a lot of creators, including myself, who are still doing most of that all by themselves. And I think it just leads to such burnout, because the expectation is you have to do it all on your own, otherwise you're a sellout. And I'm like, that's such a gross mentality. I don't know.
Well, and I have to wonder too, like, you know, there's the conversations around ADHD and like accessibility and tools for us to succeed and things like that. And one of the podcasts I'd listened to in the past, I remember being kind of turned off by it, because they were talking about how, and you know, this is kind of touching on your personal growth, right? Like for me at the time where I was at, I was kind of turned off by how they were talking about how like, oh, you should just get a house cleaner, or you should, you know, get somebody, like, outsource as much as possible as a way to cope with your ADHD. And me, with where I was at the time, was that was financially impossible, at like, yeah, it is for a lot, like a majority, yeah, of Americans, right?
Yeah.
And so I wonder, and I've caught myself doing this when we interact with people on our Discord server sometimes, where I'm just straight up like, hey, I will not remember this because my brain is wired weird. Tag me later if I haven't responded. And, you know, like, I will come back if I remember to, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I wonder, like, I wonder if we phrase it in a way, not that we should have to, obviously, but if we phrase it in a way of going like, hey, this is what I need for me and my mental health to help cope with my disability so that I can function and help you guys better. Like, I wonder if that would change the conversation around it, and how much so, like, yeah, what sort of nuance that conversation would take on then.
Yeah. And honestly, like, my like really hot take is like, I wish, instead of people thinking like, oh my God, you're a sellout, or it's like, it's so, I don't know, unauthentic to have a manager. It's like, no, like, imagine how much more successful everybody could be if we normalized having support systems. Like, I think about like Elise Meyer. Like, I mean, she's so vocal about having like social anxiety and like struggling with like mental health stuff. It's like, can you imagine like how much like less successful she would be if she didn't have that support and she didn't have that team? Like, it's fantastic that she has that. And the fact that people want to judge creators for using tools and using support and like using their resources in order to like do the thing that they are passionate about. It's like, nobody gets mad at Jeff Bezos for having like a secretary, you know? It's like, what are we doing? Like,
and the business world has understood that for years. You have, yeah, to stratify in order to focus on the things that are important and actually get whatever the product is out.
Yeah.
I don't know why those same rules don't apply to this, to content creation. Yeah. It should.
I was just going to say, because that goes along with the whole idea of like the morality thing, right, behind wealth. And, you know, I forget who said this in a video, but they were using it as a way to explain like the difference in the party mentalities. But I think it has more to do with like wealth disparity. As far as like at a certain point of wealth, it makes sense to have help. Yeah. It makes sense because obviously you deserve that. You've worked hard to have that help versus, you know, like, oh, you don't deserve it yet. You haven't reached that level yet.
Yeah.
So like, why is that even a thing versus like, you wouldn't,
because capitalism,
right? Oh my God. Look, raging socialist. So yeah. But I find it so odd that in the corporate world, like Tier was saying, like in the corporate world, yeah, they understand that because obviously the C-suite would need help. They need their underlings. Like, that's expected. Because they're still seen as like underlings, right? Versus you have a guy, you have a person who is your equal. And I think that's a little bit of the disparity too in the mindset of like, of course the CEO would have a secretary versus you, Kate, having a guy to manage your thing. Like am I making sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's like, you know, and like, that's the thing too, is like, the people that I'm working with are very much like my peers. Like, a lot of them are creators who just have like different skill sets and, you know, talents. And so, you know, like, his 9 to 5 is being a manager for other creators. And then he goes home and he's like a Twitch streamer, you know? And so it's like, it's night, like, and so it's like, for me, it's like, even more than like, oh my God, it's so unapproachable that you have a guy who helps you with your emails. It's like, no, I'm also like supporting the creator community and, you know, like, letting that, I don't know, like trickle down economics or something. I don't know where I was going with that.
Oh my God. Yeah, the socialists are like, no, trickle down economics.
No. But I mean, like, yeah, but it's just like, I don't know. I get so hung up on it because it's, I like kept it a secret for so long because I was like ashamed because I felt like a failure. You know, I was like, oh my God, I can't do it all myself. I can't run all my platforms. And then I met a really, 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 like, I'm not going to tell you who it was, but like one of the most famous YouTubers. And he was like, I don't even edit my own videos. Like, I was like, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, I like pay a dude. I just film raw content and I send it to him. And he goes, and I have people who do my, like, my comments and my emails. And he was like going down the list. And I was like, oh, so you just make content? And he was like, yeah, and everything else just, and I was like, you can do that? And
that's an option. You know? Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I know Markiplier has been like very outspoken about that, about yeah. like, oh yeah, no, I have people to do all of these things, you know, up to the point where like a few years ago, I've been a Markiplier stan for a few years now. like up to the point where like a few years ago, there was like a bit of a fallout between him and some of his team because of his behavior. And he admitted to it and was like, no, I was a jerk as a boss. I kind of sucked at it. So I don't work with my friends anymore. I hire a team now because I couldn't find that balance between the two. And so like, I, you know, kind of like what you were saying earlier, like I wish there was more transparency with these larger creators like Markiplier, Septiguy, Elise, like, all of these big creators, I wish there was more transparency with them and like, hey, this is a team effort. Like, yeah, I record the video, I record the content, but then these other people help me as part of a support system. And I wish we could like change the dialogue around that to be more of like acknowledging the fact that it is a support system.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like that I came onto your Kink and Polyamory podcast and we've basically only talked about content creation. We really crushed this. Good job, everyone.
Right? Yeah, we went off the rails pretty hard.
We tangented. Oh, no.
How surprising. So from a Kink and Poly perspective, what has been kind of the funniest change for you as your brand and as your social media platform has grown?
The army of burnt out, gifted, and talented submissive brats with a praise kink that have made themselves known to me. There's like merch and stuff now, which I think is delightful. That's like one of the fun, because I just coined that as a joke one day.
I felt so seen,
right?
I heard that. Oh my god, I was like, yes,
that I think also just honestly just being able to be more honest just about like who I am, you know, because it's like, yeah, I'm kinky, who the fuck cares, like, you know, like that kind of thing. Because I used to be like, oh, I should feel shame and guilt about it. I was just like, nah, it's what I'm into and that's okay, you know, like that.
Well, and what would you, because I mean 90% of my FYP is like kink content creators and educators, and the other 10% is like cat videos and stuff, but what would you like to see more of in kind of the kink education community?
More conversation about disability and neurodivergent inclusivity and accessibility. Like there's like, because I am neurodivergent, but I also have a physical disability. I have a condition called myoclonic dystonia, which is a very expensive way of saying that sometimes my muscles seize what I don't want them to. And just the number of, and well, and that makes me a little bit of a fall risk. And sometimes it's hard for me to get around. And just like the number of like dungeon spaces and stuff that I have gone to that are not accessible, like they're just not accessible, period. I feel like we're really doing a disservice to a broad sort of cross section of the kink community and saying like, yes, it's fine if you want to be kinky at home. Yes, it's fine if you want to be kinky on your own terms, but you have to be kinky at home because we cannot invite you into this space with us and like invite right. you into that larger community. And I think that's a shame, you know? Yeah. And so that's a big thing for me. It's just talking more about accessibility and inclusion rather than just always focusing so much on just like, I feel like we talk so much about consent yeah. and it's right. like, yeah, that's great. That's amazing. Let's always have that conversation, but also let's talk about how to make consent accessible, you know?
Absolutely. And thank you for highlighting that and unintentionally plugging the episodes, you dear podcast listener, will hear 2 weeks after this one, because we're doing episodes on disability in kink and POC inclusion within the kink sphere. So thank you, Katie, for plugging our upcoming episodes.
Love that.
So all of that leads me to, I know we got to wrap up here, but I did have one
quick question, just one theater kid to another that I'm very excited.
Oh, I'm so ready. Okay.
What do you think Shakespeare would say about your TikTok content and or your general content, your content in general?
I think bisexual icon William Shakespeare, I said what I said, get fucked. Yes. I think bisexual icon William Shakespeare would be, I was like, okay, this is, I know that we're running out of time, but it's so weird that you say that. Cause I sometimes get really sad about really dumb things. And the other day I got really sad that William Shakespeare never got to find out about Twitter. Like I was just thinking like, what would William Shakespeare's Twitter account be like? And then I started thinking about like all of the fascinating people from history that like never got to have a Twitter. And I don't know why like that's where my head went, but here we are.
Come on.
And so I think that William Shakespeare, his whole thing was, I think, being fascinated in the human condition. I think he was fascinated with the truth of humanity. And I think he was a deeply passionate and deeply interested person. I don't think he ever sought to be interesting. I think he just was. And so I think that like Shakespeare would like, he might not get it. He might not get talking about like sex on the internet. But I think like William Shakespeare would like nod approvingly at the vibe. Cause that's what I try to be. I try to be curious and interested and excited and passionate and hopefully not like fuck it up too hard along the way.
I would say you've definitely succeeded at that part.
Yeah.
In the last 1 minute, and you got some practice on the last episode.
Okay.
Kate, where can people find you on lay interwebs?
I'm Kate Asmer, and I go by Katiosaurus on all the social medias. You can find me on TikTok, on YouTube, on Instagram, on Twitter, on Twitch, on OnlyFans. And if you want to know more about me and what I do, if you want to get in contact with me, you can visit katiosaurus.com. And to make your life easier, if you want the spicy content, you can go to mostlypans.com. That's
very
it.
Well done.
Nailed
very
it. Well crushed done. It.
Yeah, totally crushed it.
So with that said, are there any upcoming projects that everybody should be looking forward to?
Yeah, actually, I'm really excited because this is coming out in November. A couple of years ago, we're going to go over time because this requires some context, but it's important.
As long as you're cool with going over time.
One time I got hyper fixated on a certain thing. And only once in my entire life. But what I got fixated on was how big was the turkey in A Christmas Carol? Because everybody talks about the fact that the turkey, I know it's weird, but it gets weirder. So for almost a month, I did an inordinate amount of historical research on how big the turkey would have been realistically in A Christmas Carol. And I found the answer. I researched it. But then I found out I was the only person in the history of space and time who cared enough to do that research. And so as it happens, I am in fact the world's foremost expert on the size of the turkey in A Christmas Carol. If you ask Google, it will tell you that I'm the person who did the research. But it became one of our most famous episodes of our podcast, which if you would like to check it out, it's called Kate and Eric's Infinite Quest, an ADHD adventure. We talk about life with ADHD and depression, sometimes kink, navigating life as neurodivergent adults, and we also play D&D. It's a confusing podcast, but here we are. But that episode was so successful and has become so sort of iconic that I am releasing a video essay version of the turkey in A Christmas Carol with like research, and there's going to be like videos and like stock footage and shit. I've been working really, really hard on it. And I say that now in the past Katie, sitting in, I don't even know what day it is, in September, I'm already working on it. And so that video is going to drop the week before Thanksgiving. So if you would like to check it out, it will be on my YouTube. Has nothing to do with kink or ADHD or anything that I do. But it is very informative about the turkey in A Christmas Carol.
I fucking love that. And
I spent 5 minutes for that.
Right?
I almost this is really important, guys.
I hope the History Channel picks that up. And like it becomes one of those like advanced alien civilizations.
Oh my God. There's this historian. Her name is Ruth Goodman. And she's been on a bunch of stuff. Ruth Goodman was on our podcast. Because I'm a huge fangirl of Ruth Goodman. And Ruth Goodman and I had a whole ass conversation about this turkey. And she was like, I'm sorry, you did what? And I was like, yeah, you know, I got bored. And she's like, that's cool. Like, I was like so nerdy that Ruth Goodman was concerned. And I was like, that's
correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't Ruth the one that like, now she's like the leading researcher on like arbitrary like laundry, right?
Yeah.
Well, okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, because Ruth Goodman is, okay, this is such a, like, you're like, welcome to our kink podcast where we're going to talk about Elizabethan laundry.
Yes.
But Ruth Goodman is one of my favorite people in the whole world because she doesn't have, like, a master's. She was like me, where one day she was like, why doesn't anybody know how they did their laundry when Shakespeare was writing Hamlet? And so she got really curious and she did a shitload of research and she just started talking about it and doing her own research. And now she's written like a bunch of books and she's on all these shows and everything. And I was like, I want to be Ruth Goodman when I grow up. Like, that's just what I want to be. And so I started with The Turkey and A Christmas Carol and here we are.
I love that so much. Like, that is so near dear. Like, I remember that podcast episode and I was just like so excited because I was like, I remember this one. And I remember like listening to that and going, that is absolutely something I would do. Cause I've gone on tangents, like on, like in my spiritual work, literally just for the same reason. Cause I was like wondering, you know, like, I wonder what happens if this and this and that. It just like all of a sudden,
yeah,
I'm a month deep of research.
Right. And I just like it because it's like also it's something that like people now know about me. And so like I'll go to conventions and I'll be like on panels and it'll be like, okay, time for an audience Q&A. And like every fucking convention, somebody will walk up to the microphone and be like, how big was the turkey in A Christmas Carol? And I'm like, let me tell you about the turkey in A Christmas Carol.
And then the panel becomes just about that.
And then Eric sighs deeply and thinks about all of his life choices that led us here. So that's fine.
That's awesome. We actually got invited to speak on a panel next year at DragonCon.
That's so cool.
Yeah,
what are you gonna be on?
We're gonna be talking about sex during a zombie apocalypse. Yeah. So yeah, that should be real fun. Yeah, come see us at DragonCon, Frolicon, and if you're in or around the New Orleans area on November 17th, come see Twin and I do a performance at the Dom Experience. So fun.
Yes. Well, thank you again, Kate. I truly appreciate you coming on. Like, I know I've been fangirling this whole time, so it's meant a lot to have you on here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And as always, dear listeners, my darlings, my loves, my babies, be good to yourself. Be good to others. Give yourself grace, love, and patience.
And more than anything else, go out and do some dope shit.
Goodbye.